This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Firefighters battling major wildfires in Southern California, even as the winds ease today. At the White House, President Biden briefed this past hour and announced the federal government will pay 100% of cleanup costs for devastated areas for the next 180 days. That in addition to providing federal resources.
It's going to pay for things like debris and hazard material removal, temporary shelters, first responders' salaries, and all necessary measures to protect life and property.
Earlier, President Biden delivered the eulogy at the state funeral of former President Jimmy Carter at National Cathedral in Washington. Carter's casket has arrived back in his home state of Florida for a private family service. Tomorrow, the Supreme Court scheduled to hear arguments over the future of TikTok in the U.S. The China-based parent company of the popular sharing app could be banned January 19th. The Justice Department says due to national security risks. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. The Juneau County Sheriff's Office said Thursday that they have taken triple homicide suspect Virgil Thew into custody. Thew is accused of killing 33-year-old Elizabeth Kolba, 13-year-old Skyla Sorensen, and a 12-year-old girl last week. In a post just before 1 p.m. Thursday, the Sheriff's Office posted that Thew was arrested and that the public is not in danger. The FBI and U.S. Marshals helped in the search. New Lisbon police said that they received 172 tips as of Wednesday on Thew's whereabouts. On the agenda for the La Crosse City Council on Thursday, a resolution seeking state and federal aid to help deal with homelessness in La Crosse. The six-part request would be sent to the governor, state legislature, Congress, and federal agencies. The council will also take up two projects that would redevelop Grandview Hospital and South Library into housing. Other items include several property rezoning requests, adding annex properties to voting wards, and a few clerical changes to city ordinances. Three seats on the La Crosse County Circuit Court Judicial Bench are up for election this spring. Two of those elections will be unopposed as Elliot Levine and Scott Horn are running again for branches 2 and 4, respectively. Meanwhile, Joe Veenstra and Eric Sanford are running to replace Ramona Gonzalez in Branch 1, who is retiring. Veenstra is a La Crosse area lawyer, and Sanford is the family court commissioner in La Crosse County. There will not be a primary. All three branches will have an election on April 1st. Federal government buildings are closed today as a national day of mourning for former President Jimmy Carter, who died on December 29th at 100 years old. President Joe Biden will deliver a eulogy at Carter's funeral today, and President-elect Donald Trump is expected to attend the service. The U.S. Postal Service will not deliver mail today, and federal offices and departments will be closed. In addition, the stock exchange will not have trading today. Flags at government buildings will fly at half staff through January 28th.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now at civicmedia.us/app. From the Civic Media Newsroom in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
The Bucks roll over the Spurs.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks with a 121-105 win over the Spurs last night, snapping a three-game losing streak at home for Milwaukee. Giannis with his 432nd career double-double, surpassing the franchise record set by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Damian Lillard on the Bucks' best performance since beating the Thunder for the NBA Cup.
Everything starts with, you know, our focus. And I think, you know, we've just been more focused coming off some games that we feel like we should have won. Ultimately, like, what's going to give us a chance to win games, and what are we doing when we're at our best?
College Hoops, Wisconsin hosts Minnesota, 6 o'clock tomorrow night. NFL, it's the Packers and the Eagles, Sunday at 3:30. Packers quarterbacks Jordan Love, an elbow injury. Malik Willis, his right thumb, limited in practice. I asked Love about losing Christian Watson to a torn ACL.
That's a huge loss. It's one of those ones that it sucks. You know, you hurt for Christian, especially at this time of the year.
That's Jordan Love with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Lingering flurries and snow showers through the evening, some clearing overnight, lows upper teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, highs upper 20s. Dry Saturday, more snow possible late Saturday night and Sunday. Weekend highs, upper 20s to around 30 degrees. It's 28 degrees right now.
Matt Nair on Air.
It is our 1 year anniversary here on Matt Nair on Air. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, for being on this journey with me. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. I can't speak for Calvin.
I'm always thrilled to be here.
Unbridled.
The enthusiasm
enjoyment.
Brimming over from you, Calvin. I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbus Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Allbus Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
Next, I review 2024 in the law and talk about what it tells each of us about our expectations for 2025 and your family. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a part, 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. on the board, across the desk. James Santel, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review. You can check him out on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m., and jazzed as hell to introduce to you Jack Kelly. He's a State House reporter with WisconsinWatch.org. And he has a recent piece out talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dom. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for coming around, man. You know, we just got done with an election. Barely into the new year. And here we go again. And my understanding, Jack, this is going to be a very expensive election.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be shaping up that way. You know, both Brad Schimmel, the conservative candidate, and Susan Crawford, the liberal candidate, just this week did some self-reporting of their fundraising numbers, and they broke the record for this period in time. Schimmel did, reporting first, and then Crawford came along and broke it again, and that's just the candidates. So never mind the fact once we get into the state parties and outside groups and a lot of people are going to be watching this race. It's kind of the first race across the entire country since November that will have a lot of eyeballs. So it'll certainly be expensive.
Very expensive. A lot of dark money. And wow, records for this reporting term for both candidates. That's amazing. That's amazing, Jack. The production, let's call it, out of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, only 14 cases decided, kind of slow. What's your take on that, Jack?
You know, I think it is interesting and it is unique. If you compare the court's most recent term, the kind of 23-24 term, if you will, to prior terms. Yeah, only 14 cases, though they were certainly some high-profile cases. So I think if you were to ask folks familiar or the justices themselves, they might say, yeah, okay, maybe on paper it looks like we didn't do that much, but actually we took on some of these massive cases that can be quite time-consuming and involve a lot of fact-finding to some degree, which the Supreme Court, as Jim could tell you, is not equipped to do necessarily in the way that a trial court is.
Yeah.
And so it can certainly contribute to that. But yeah, no, it's certainly an outlier. I mean, typically the state Supreme Court takes and disposes of, that's the technical term, dispose of, settles 50, 60 cases in a term.
Wow.
That's been kind of the 20th century average. Of course, things change. For a long time, Wisconsin did not have a court of appeals. So if you lost in circuit court, your only recourse was to appeal to the state Supreme Court. So, of course, they were hearing a lot more cases in those years back in the day. But, 14 was certainly a low output by any measure when you compare it to prior years.
And I think this statistic kind of goes along with the former conservative Wisconsin Supreme Courts. Of those 14 cases, only four of them were settled along a 4-3 ideological lines. And in my understanding, based on the history of the previous conservative courts, that's not uncommon. Most cases are solved, if not unanimously, certainly with large majorities. Is the court as biased, maybe that's the wrong term, as political or ideologically split as some people think. I mean, one would think that perhaps, you know, all 14 of those cases would have been across ideological lines.
You know, that is a really interesting question. I'm certain that depending on who you ask, you would get a different answer.
Yeah, right.
I will say that when you look at the 4-3 cases, they were ones that you might expect to be settled along 4-3 along ideological lines. 4 liberal justices in the majority, the 3 current conservative justices in the minority. It was the redistricting case, of course, which Democrats were eager to bring once Justice Janet Protasiewicz was sworn in. Obviously, there had been a really long, drawn-out saga of redistricting litigation after the 2020 census. It was, honestly, it is a little bit unusual for it to come up again so soon. Also, the case about the use of unstaffed absentee ballot drop boxes. Mm-hmm. The then conservative-controlled court just a couple of years ago outlawed them in Wisconsin. 3 of those 4 justices that voted in that are still on the court. Now, of course, they believe that their decision should still be in place, but they were, you know, in the minority at that point. So the other 2, I mean, were maybe a little less surprising. One of them involved a Catholic Charities Bureau and whether or not they qualify for an exemption from having to pay into the state's unemployment program. And the 4th one, it was an eminent domain case, whether or not the village of Egg Harbor up in Door County could take a piece of land from a restaurant so that they could build a sidewalk. So maybe not that controversial. And there were political cases that they settled, 6-1. I look at the Evers versus Markline case, which was all about the so-called legislative veto and whether or not the Joint Finance Committee and the legislature could block certain conservation projects. They got together and 6-1 agreed with the governor on that one, with Rebecca Bradley, who is maybe the most outspoken conservative member of the court, siding with her liberal colleagues in that one. So, and Jack, it's not always so straightforward.
Right, Jack, you make a great point, too. We forget that whether it's the United States Supreme Court, the Supreme Courts of all the states, the majority of the cases that they address are not taking headlines of the sort that you report on routinely, right? Right. And maybe there's a reason for that. An awful lot of procedural things happen, right? And a lot of things need to be resolved that are important to lawyers, very important for the litigants themselves, but they just don't attract that attention. And for that reason, again, and they do not partake of partisan views when it comes to resolving them. Understanding how the federal rules of civil procedure work or other state criminal code should be applied. Those things may not always fall down along partisan lines, and that's the reason why you get the
and
majority of them.
And those are boring headlines.
That's the point. Right?
That's James Santel.
They're not interested in those cases, typically.
Right. That's James Santel, former U.S. attorney. We're joining Jack Kelly. He's a State House reporter with WisconsinWatch.org. One of my go-to places to check out local news here, folks. I suggest you do so as well, WisconsinWatch.org. Okay, Jack, let's do the what ifs, right? So we have 2 candidates. One's a conservative, one's a liberal. Let's go down that road. If Susan Crawford, the quote unquote liberal candidate, wins, what happens then?
Well, let's be clear, Dom. There's no way to know for certain, but there are certainly clues of how these things could happen. Susan Crawford, Dane County judge, prominent in the Madison legal community for several years. I mean, was an attorney that was involved in a legal challenge to Act 10 back when Act 10 was first coming around, has represented Planned Parenthood in litigation. Prominent figure. She's endorsed by the 4 current liberal justices. Mm. There is no primary now that the filing deadline has come and gone. And so it was pretty clear that in the kind of liberal legal world, the justices were setting the agenda of who they wanted the candidate to be.
Yeah.
So I think, you could extrapolate and and not necessarily the most recent term is not a great example of this, but the liberal justices do disagree with each other on certain cases. So there's no certain way to say for sure she's just going to fall in line and lockstep and do everything with them. But
sure,
it seems likely that you will get a court more akin to the one that we have today if Susan Crawford is elected.
And that would give the liberal courts the majority up until at least 2028?
Yeah, that's right. Because the way that it works here in Wisconsin, justices are elected to 10-year terms. They happen in April. And you were joking about it being election season again. Dom, it's going to be election season for eternity in Wisconsin because we have a state Supreme Court race, of course, coming up in a few months in April. But then we have a state Supreme Court race in April of 2026, of 2027, of 2028, of 2029, and of 2030. So there won't be a reprieve from these kind of high-profile elections. But the way that they fall, if Susan Crawford wins, the next two justices that are up for re-election are Rebecca Bradley and Chief Justice Annette Ziegler, who are both conservative members.
And those are coming up in the next subsequent following 2 years.
That's right, 2026 and 2027, respectively.
So if Susan Crawford were to lose this election, for those on the left that are hoping that she wins, we'll get another crack at it coming up in the next year, the following year.
Two opportunities to have a go at it. The interesting thing maybe, and this is the other side of your question, is the what if Brad Schimmel wins, what happens? We actually have an idea of this. We would go back to a court of kind of the 2020 to 2023 era where Justice Brian Hagedorn, who's kind of the quieter, less more unassuming member of the court, doesn't quite get into it with his colleagues in the way that some of the other justices do, would have a lot of influence during that 3-year period.
Yeah.
He was the decision maker. There were 61 cases, I believe, settled 4-3 along ideal law, or 4-3. He was in the majority, the four justices majority, in 50 of those 61 cases. He is the person that really is the deciding vote when it comes to things. So, we have an idea of where both things are going to be, keep the liberal court as is, and also, kind of re-empower Brian Hagedorn to have a lot of influence up at the Capitol building.
Jack Kelly, State House reporter at WisconsinWatch.org, has a piece out today, yesterday. You also mentioned political discord empowers the court. What do you mean by that, Jack?
Well, this is not my idea, and it's maybe not a new idea, and I'm sure Jim will be able to point to many examples of this. But the idea that right now the more traditionally political branches of government in Wisconsin, the legislature and the governor, don't see eye to eye very often. Of course, they do reach compromise, and they work things out, but oftentimes they don't. Oftentimes they're suing each other, and oftentimes they're landing in court because when those two branches can't work together, somebody has to answer the question. Typically, it becomes the court. And so, I was talking to a law professor at Marquette, a guy named Chad Oldfather, super knowledgeable, and he described it in the piece I believe I mentioned. He said something along the lines of, in America, all questions tend to become legal questions, and in the current political environment that we are in, it seems to be happening more often.
Everything eventually goes to the law.
We look more and more to the judges. Frankly, Jack, I suspect your piece kind of supports this notion to decide policy, right? When you think about all the things that are in the courts these days, whether it's the circuit courts, the appellate courts here in Wisconsin, from the Supreme Court, federally, look at all of the, even something as simple as TikTok, right? Tomorrow, we're going to be hearing about that in the Supreme Court. Social media issues, healthcare issues, education. You mentioned, again, of course, the voting issues, Jack, all these kinds of things. We used to think that that's a legislative thing, right? And maybe the governor says yes or no, and we've got a fight between them. We are way beyond the time when Supreme Court Chief Justice said, I just call balls and strikes. That's not the case anymore, right? We're addressing these big ticket policy issues on a regular basis.
And Jack,
is happening. I mean, it's going to happen twice. Next week, we have two cases coming before the state Supreme Court, and they're very technical to your point. It's about whether or not an agency needs to promulgate rules before it can enforce something or the other thing. But the reality is that it'll be boiled down to, can the executive branch do policymaking? And in the other case, it's can the state DNR enforce the spill law if somebody, if there's PFAS contamination on a business's property, et cetera. So there's real world consequences for these very technical questions.
Yes, they are. Jack Kelly, State House reporter, WisconsinWatch.org. Jack, thank you so much for coming around. Please do so again
as
news continues to break. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Come back 855-752-4842.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The beginning of the year means a new session for the Wisconsin State Legislature. Members of the State Senate and State Assembly were sworn into office on Monday, January 6th. There are a lot of new faces in that group, with 6 new members in the State Senate and 31 new representatives in the State Assembly. While Republicans will remain in the majority, that majority is now the smallest it has been in more than a decade. The days of the GOP's supermajority are over. After last year's elections under new, fairer maps, we'll see if those smaller majorities lead to more compromise in a legislature that's been dominated by the right for nearly 15 years. Just a handful of seats make the difference now between a Republican and Democratic majority, and there are many more opportunities now to bring accountability to legislators, especially those in competitive districts. And in a healthy democracy, that's the way things should be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
The Republicans and Donald Trump want to impose tariffs. They say it's going to bring in $2.7 trillion.
That's what they say when they're trying to justify a tax reduction. Those broad tariffs are not good for the average American.
You know, Sandy, I'm not a guy that knows anything about calculus and any of those things, but I do know how to add and subtract. They're adding to the national debt.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. I want to thank our most recent guest, Jack Kelly, Statehouse reporter with WisconsinWatch.org. His piece that was published on Monday, my bad, Jack, that was on Monday, January 6th, another pivotal Wisconsin Supreme Court election offers two familiar outcomes. Folks, I know it's always tough these days to get some decent reporting. Jack and the team over at Wisconsin Watch do a fine job. Check them out, WisconsinWatch.org. All right. Speaking of Supreme Courts, let's go down this road. The president elect, James Santel at the table with me, has asked the U.S. Supreme Court.
He does know that there is a Supreme Court, so I'll give him that, right?
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And he's had some success with them before, right?
Well, come
right?
on, man. They gave him a get out of jail free right? pass.
And it turns out that the guy who argued on behalf of immunities for him, turns out he's going to be the Solicitor General in a couple of weeks here. So it
nice.
All works out
it's,
well.
It's all in the right? family. It's all in the family. So what is his ask of the U.S. Supreme Court?
Right. He's asking, and we're still looking at our watches here because TikTok, we know that Juan Merchan is scheduled to call the case of New York versus Trump tomorrow morning and finally sentence. That's what we do in America.
Do you believe it's going to happen? Exactly. Come on, man.
And, you know, I will
give
see
me
it,
some
right,
odds.
Right?
Well, give me some odds.
We still have, by my count, we still have about 15 hours to go. Anything can happen.
So yes or right, no, or right, do you want or do you want a line?
My thought is yes.
Yes.
I think it will happen. Yes. And however, again, we've got 15 hours. So what happens is the New York Appeals Court, all the courts there say, no, we're not stepping in. We're not stopping this. He runs to the United States Supreme Court and says, stop this from happening. Not good. And interestingly, among other things, talk about non-legal reasons, but a political reason, he said, if this goes ahead, somehow it will interrupt the course of my preparation for becoming my transition into the presidency. That's his principal argument. And again,
we have the other one. So he has the public release of the special counsel report,
right.
which is a separate issue.
Exactly.
Now, his concern there, and the sub-headline over the Washington Post, the president-elect's lawyers say the public release, again, the different topic here,
right.
the special counsel report would violate his right to an orderly transition to the presidency.
Right.
I mean, what was January 6th? Now you're all concerned about an orderly transition?
Right.
Well, how it affects him, Dom.
Oh, that's right.
And this transition up to now has been completely orderly, has it not? Right?
It has been,
right,
yes.
Right. So lots of issues there. I think none of them is going anywhere. But along the way, we get this reporting that while the Supreme Court is looking at all these kinds of issues related to the presidency, that a fellow named Sam Alito, who's an associate justice, apparently has a phone call. And it apparently comes from a fellow named William Levi, who is one of the justice's former law clerks, asking that the justice take a call from the president-elect regarding his qualifications to serve in a government position. And Alito says, I agreed to discuss this matter with President-elect Trump, and he called me yesterday afternoon while literally on the eve of all of this happening. While this is going on, that's the problem. That's the huge problem. And it again, it's easy to say it looks bad, but it's just more than that, right? While you're deciding things that go to the very future of the nation and the status of the president-elect, gee, I think the candidacy of this particular law clerk, maybe he is brilliant and maybe he's going to get this job. Maybe could have waited, maybe even a couple of weeks or so.
You need to
do that right now.
Yes, right now.
And it's the timing that looks so very bad.
But these things don't these little things matter? Like, you know, we talked about Jimmy Carter putting the sun.
Solar panels.
I'm losing my mind here. Jimmy Carter putting the solar panels. I mean, it's not going to like bring a whole lot of electricity in the White House, but it was a symbolic thing. I mean,
right.
It can be interpreted in many different ways, as do these actions by Trump right now.
Right. I will tell you, so this is a thing that happens all the time in the courthouse, and I'm always very, very sensitive to it. You're appearing in front of judges. I work in the state courts principally now, so I'm in the federal court, and you know them in other settings as well. You see them in the hallways, you see them, and you go out of your, frankly, when I have a trial coming up the following Monday, I go to the other side of the aisle. I just don't want to have any contact with that judge. Maybe 4 weeks later, a month later, okay, fine. I can have a little chit-chat about what you did over the holidays, those kinds of things. You just don't do it while you're going in to argue a case in front of that very, very jurist.
What a nice thought, Jim. I mean, what a process of a bygone era. Is everything now bygone era? Because that doesn't, I mean, when you have the president-elect calling a U.S. Supreme Court, you know, ostensibly about this Levi character and perhaps other issues as well, when he has, you know, basically cases before them. It seems a little problematic.
I think it's hugely problematic. And again, the issue is, what are we going to do about it? Well, oh, by the way, the Chief Justice never really articulated. I put forth some standards that we shouldn't have this appearance of impropriety, those kinds of things, and should provide confidence to the American public. There's no enforceability on any of this, and it differentiates the Supreme Court from the lower courts on all this. The problem, once again, is as America looks at this, you think, what else did they perhaps talk about? And frankly, I'll even give them this. Let us assume, I know you're going to balk at this, Tom. Let's assume that both of them are being honest about what was said and was not said. The very fact that you're getting a phone call from the president, and, oh, by the way, you've got a file on your desk at the far end that has that person's name on it. Actually, two files, right? And I've got to decide both of these. And here's the person who's calling me right now.
And several in your cabinet that were already been processed.
Exactly, right? That's the problem. Is it just, and in a situation like this, when you become a Supreme Court justice, when you take a call from the president, I think it's got to be vetted beyond belief. What is the purpose of the call? Let the staff person know you about and ask about it. Frankly, we were routinely told as United States attorneys that if you ever get a call from the White House, the answer is you do not take that call. You call me in justice and say, guess what? Somebody from the White House is calling me in Eastern Wisconsin. You do not want that look. You do not want that engagement. That's how strict the rules should be. We ran roughshod over that completely, admittedly in a different setting here, but same kind of principles apparently do not apply.
That's a nice Supreme Court. Be a shame if anything happened to it. Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review. That fine show airs on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. Come back with us. We're going to talk about Fani Willis. We're going to talk about this release of Jack Smith's one, maybe two reports, plus your calls and texts, 855-752-4842.
Murder, 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 murder. listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. The Juneau County Sheriff's Office said Thursday that they have taken Triple homicides suspect Thursday that they have taken custody of Thursday.
Seven people are vying for three seats. Among them is incumbent Meredith Garcia. The other six are Joy Buckman, Molly Fuchs, Adam Hoffer, Kevin Hunt, Jeff Jackson, and Sam Morris. Two other current members of the board, Katie Birkdahl and current board president Juan Jimenez, decided not to run. After the primary on February 18th, three people will be elected to the board on April 1st. Wisconsin is among the states dealing with a shrinking population. With more, here's Civic Media's Stuart J. Waddles.
A recent study by the Wisconsin Department of Administration projects a decline of nearly 200,000 Wisconsin residents by 2050. The report attributes the decrease in declining birth rates and the aging of the baby boom generation. While some counties like Dane are expected to grow, others, particularly in the northern part of the state, could see population declines of 15% or more.
The effects can already be seen here in the Cooley region. The La Crosse School District is consolidating elementary schools due to declining enrollment. Two people are hurt after a shooting early yesterday morning in Onalaska. According to Onalaska police, the shooting happened around 2 a.m. A man and a woman were taken to the hospital, one of them with life-threatening injuries. Police said that there is no danger to the community. Names have not yet been released by police, and nobody has been arrested or charged in the shooting as of Thursday morning. At the time of the shooting, both people were able to speak to police and first responders, according to WXOW-TV.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. The effect of the fires in Los Angeles have been devastating. The ultimate impact on the entertainment business remains to be seen, but two notable premieres were canceled due to the fires, including Universal's Wolfman, which was scheduled to have its premiere at the TCL Chinese Theater Tuesday night. Jennifer Lopez's Unstoppable premiere was also canceled Tuesday night. There is no word on whether or not the events will be rescheduled. Wolfman is set to hit theaters on Martin Luther King Day weekend. Matthew Perry has managed to stay in the news fairly often following his mysterious death in 2023. His friend's colleague Lisa Kudrow made news the other day when she appeared on the Drew Barrymore show and told Barrymore that Perry gave her the famous Friends cookie jar from the set as a parting gift after the last episode. Kudrow added that Perry left a note in the cookie jar that she only recently discovered after his death. It is unclear why Kudrow checked the cookie jar after all these years. Maybe a serious case of the munchies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Lingering flurries and snow showers through the evening, some clearing overnight, lows upper teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, highs upper 20s. Dry Saturday, more snow possible late Saturday night and Sunday. Weekend highs upper 20s to around 30 degrees. Currently it's 26.
I'm Dr. Jasmine Zapata, Chief Medical Officer for Community Health at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Every year in the U.S., about 21,000 lung cancer deaths are caused by radon, an odorless, tasteless, and colorless gas. One in 10 Wisconsin homes has high levels of radon. Does yours? Call 1-888-LOW-RADON or visit lowradon.org to learn more. Test. Fix. Save a life.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
I drew my brother's name one year and we went to the mall and I said, hey, while you're in there, grab me a Christmas card. We're doing the gift exchange later. So he walks upstairs, gets the card, hands it to me. I sign it, Merry Christmas. Love, Pete. And that was my gift to him. And I made him pick out, pay for, and retrieve. He's like, you are the laziest, cheapest. It was absolutely beautiful.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, what is going on in North Carolina and in Florida with Judge Eileen Cannon? Jim Santel from Abacus Law Review joins us to break it all down. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review, at the table for the next 30 minutes. Jess P.S. is on the board. I see you folks on the lines and texting in. Be patient. We will get to you, 855-75-CIVIC. All right, let's recap. I know we kind of bounced around there briefly. So New York's highest court on Thursday declined to block Trump's sentencing in the hush money case. Okay, so that means his only recourse, as we discussed, would be going to the U.S. Supreme Court, where he just, you know, had a conversation with Alito about some other totally separate issues, and that's totally fine.
And in fairness to the chronology here, they knew they were going to do this. The call apparently takes place a little bit before the filing, the request is made. For that, just to be pure, I know we're focused always on accuracy.
Well, is that better or worse?
I think you'd make arguments in both directions,
what I'm saying,
right?
You know,
right?
Hey,
exactly, right?
Now it just got you on the mind, oh yeah, by the way.
Why this is coming, right? Yeah. And it shouldn't make a difference, but just for purists who want to identify the timing of these things, that's the timing there.
Think about the old mafia gangster kind of stuff. Right. You know, hey, I'm going to have we just had a nice conversation before my friend's going to call you. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, so I think either way, it looks bad.
But absolutely.
So that's the one case. And the U.S. Supreme Court will now, if I recall, was this the one where Sotomayor told the DA, I'm sorry, Alvin Bragg.
Alvin Bragg,
they
right.
had till like yesterday at 10 o'clock to respond. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
They've got some filings that should be made. Frankly, they should be filed right now. And so if we could get onto the docket immediately, we'd see what that looks like. But there may be some action here. Boy, if the United States Supreme Court steps in and stops this, again, that my faith begins to dissipate very, very quickly.
Come on,
once again,
justice
right?
is blind is a right, product of right. a bygone era, Jim. Okay, right. So then now this brings us to the next case, of course, and this is the special counsel report. And my understanding, this is going to be kind of broken down into two reports, one
based
for
upon the two
the
cases,
documents
right?
and one for the J6.
Right.
Now, Eileen Cannon has stepped in, and I don't know where she gets the moxie to step in. What has she got to do with any of this, Jim?
We spoke on this very broadcast, my friend, about the fact that when she dismissed that case, finding that Jack Smith had no jurisdiction, improperly appointed. Remember this? This is that constitutional right. problem. She's wrong about that. She bucks up against tens of years.
Now, that's under appeal.
So that goes up on appeal, right? And so at the time that she does that, however, she does the extraordinary thing on the last page. She says that I'm dismissing the case. The clerk of court is directed to take everything off the docket. No more hearings, no more filings. This is closed, 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 closed. Well, except that she decided apparently to dip her toe back into the lake of this when she gets an application from the two other defendants. So, again, it's a little bit complicated. Along the way, Jack Smith dismisses the case while it's pending before the 11th Circuit. The documents case, but only as to Donald Trump, right?
Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira, who work for Donald Trump, they're still charged.
With obstruction of justice. These are the guys who are going around wondering, how can we stop these tapes from recording? How do we destroy all this?
And how do we move the boxes?
Right. And who's coming when? So they're still the bungling defendants who are out there. And that's the portion of this that's still before the 11th Circuit, right? And so the 11th Circuit still has jurisdiction over this, and presumably at some point will determine whether or not Eileen Cannon was right, even on the underlying case there. Along the way, again, what is going on here, Eileen Cannon? Not only did you wash your hands of this, but it's all before the 11th Circuit now, right? And we've got this fundamental notion, America, we do one case at a time. Going back to the hush money case, it's the reason why I think you and I are pleased by the fact that this case finally, if it's sentenced tomorrow, it will be done. And then if Donald Trump wants to appeal that to the appeals court in New York, he can do that. The same thing applies to the federal courts. She was done with this case. She has no more jurisdiction, not only because she said, I'm through with it, tied it up and not only put it on the shelf, but deep sixed it somewhere inside the catacombs of the Fort Pierce federal court there. But the 11th Circuit, that's the only tribunal right now that should be resolving any of this.
And the 11th Circuit has slapped her down twice before,
right? Exactly. So they're used to rolling their eyes when they see these kinds of things. And Jack Smith now has appealed even that decision, right, to prevent that she says, do not release the report. And she actually says, don't release any of this report, yeah, right? She says both as to the documents and as to J6.
What if she has zero to do with J6? Okay.
Exactly.
A couple of thoughts that I had with regards to the documents, and this is the hoarding of the national secrets.
Right.
You know, and even when we say, which I think when we say documents, it kind of makes it light. I mean, the guy was hanging on to our crown jewels of national security and secrets,
and talking with people about them.
What we don't know is even perhaps scarier. But that aside, we don't know. But so that's that particular case. And the other one, the quote-unquote hush money, well, that's election interference. You paid that money to keep the mouth shut so it wouldn't harm him before an election. You know, Donald Trump has a tendency to, you know, do those kinds of things. So that being said, with regards to the national secret / documents case, these other two defendants, I kind of get it. I mean, I do feel for them. How could you have this report come out? You haven't even been to trial yet, and your names are all over this thing. Wouldn't that taint the jury pool or something along those lines? Could they? I mean, if you wanted to, I appreciate their position. I don't think their names should be slung through the mud yet. That's what the trial is for. I mean, Donald Trump is not these cats. Just redact their names and anything to do with them.
Right.
What's the problem?
All kinds of solutions there. And again, that argument is not frivolous at all. Again, we the whole reason why, again, the Mueller report came out as it did, because you want to be able to give the targets, the subjects of your report, the opportunity to have them to be the cases tried in a trial setting.
Have their day in court.
Absolutely. So there is that. And that's why, once again, all of this is so very convoluted by virtue of the fact also that as a part of his commission, you know that he's going to go out of business here. He's not only going to be the special counsel. He is required, not only by virtue of his appointment, but also by the statute under which he was appointed, to produce a report about all of this.
Oh, okay? That's all unconstitutional. Eileen Cannon said it was.
Exactly. And so all these things, the bottom line is, yes, the 11th Circuit needs to wrestle with all of this and get some clarity to all of it. The upshot is that you know, even beyond all the niceties of this, if the Attorney General wants to issue a report, say, for example, on the police in St. Louis, on environmental issues in Portland, on commerce issues and other things out there, this notion that somehow, falling back on our discussion a few moments ago with Jack Kelly, this notion that we went to the courts now, we're stopping everything from happening, and we're preventing now one branch of government from reporting on something that has a public interest to it, right? And when it gets back to the larger issue, which is about J6 and about the assault on our Capitol, please tell me that sometime in the next 9 to 10 days, that report will be issued so that we can get clarity on the trial that would have been, right?
Yeah.
And you've talked about this before. That's the important thing. It's supposed to happen statutorily, supposed to happen by virtue of his commission, and that needs to happen. Even if somehow the documents matter is stymied by the continuing prosecution of the two, this report needs to be issued. The concern is when Merrick Garland and folks are no longer there at 9th and Constitution, what happens with that report? We've seen what Bill Barr was doing with reports in the past. It needs to come out in some fashion sometime in the next week or in a week and a couple of days.
Is there any legal barrier for Merrick Garland to release the report on J6? I mean, could he just release that right now? I mean, I don't see how Eileen Cannon's got anything to do with it. I mean, And if he did, would there be any consequence for him to do so?
I would say now in this world, because she has got no jurisdiction over that whatsoever. That's completely absurd. Yes, Merrick, again, going back to our conversation about being a little bit bolder here. Now this is a time when release your report. And if
release right, the Kraken.
Right, exactly, right? If at some point, again, this is a ridiculous order. The 11th Circuit has not yet told him he can't do that. If at some point the 11th Circuit in the next few hours or next few days says you can't do it, you still think, gee, history, right? And what is the remedy for that? I'm not advocating that you violate an order of the court, but there are members of the cabinet who've been held in contempt for doing things that are contrary to what courts will tell them to do. That's the remedy. That's what happened. Eric Holder was held in contempt for sparring with Congress about various things. That's the remedy.
Is there a court order right now preventing Merrick Garland from releasing the J6 report Jack Smith?
Other than Aline Cannon's intervention, this no. That's why he's now appealed this.
So he has appealed it. So he has an order that he thinks
is crazy,
out of bounds,
right? And presumably, what I think will be the good news here. Presumably, the 11th Circuit will third, maybe fourth time look at Aline Cannon and say, no, you don't have jurisdiction here. You can go ahead and at least release the January 6th portion of this. Nothing about that relates to the documents case. We've got the other two. Maybe they cut the baby in half here a little bit and do some remedy there. But no reason why this should not come out in the public domain in the next 9 or 10 days. Heavy sigh.
Is time of the essence in my opinion. If Donald Trump will take office soon, does the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, is this a priority? What's their timing on this?
Well, they certainly live in the real world, right? And they recognize, as all these judges do, that we're going to get a new president here, and there'll be not new folks at the Department of Justice, but whoever the acting attorney general is for a
new
while.
New priorities,
right? Exactly,
Jim.
Right? Right. Interesting to see whether Lisa Monaco, who is the deputy attorney general, she will probably leave also, as will Jack Smith and other top leaders there, maybe the assistant attorneys general. You basically get some caretakers in those positions, and they are then a part of the Trump administration. And the question then is raised when you get that phone call from the White House, from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. What do you do when you've got that directive? Well, it depends upon who's taking the call at the other end. Oh, my goodness. So lots of things to – and that's the other reason why. In the interest of history, in the interest of bringing this to conclusion, just like tomorrow Juan Merchan should bring that case to conclusion, let the appeals go forward in New York, Merrick Garland should go ahead and release this report. Release it in its entirety, right? And maybe you do some redactions. He's already said, I'm going to release it in a redacted form to protect some of the legal interests of those who remain as defendants. Do that. Get that done, Merrick. And let that be one of your last official acts as our chief federal law enforcement officer.
If the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit for a third time slaps down Aline Cannon, right, that nullifies her order.
Right.
Now,
right.
Certainly Donald Trump could appeal that. But to the right, U.S. Supreme Court.
Right,
but in the meantime,
right.
The order is squashed. Right?
Exactly, right? And again, Donald Trump's attorneys, they know how to file things, could move for a stay of the 11th Circuit decision. In other words, don't go ahead and release this report yet. And the 11th Circuit has a decision then to make about whether or not it stays. If suppose they say, no, we're not going to hold off on doing that. Then he runs to the Supreme Court and says, you stay the order of the 11th Circuit. You tell the 11th Circuit.
But in between that time,
they could
drop it, right?
They could drop it, exactly. Exactly right. And that's why, as I've said, timing is so very close here, and this needs to happen. In the end, as I step back from all this, thinking about all these machinations, which are confusing, there is so much going on. Yeah. It's a lot. It is a lot. In the end, what he is saying is courts, the federal courts, the state courts, there are things that are going to be said about me that are bad. Stop that from happening. And you know what? When you're the president of the United States of America, that sort of comes with the territory, especially if you've committed crimes and crimes that are not going to see the light of day in trial. You've got to anticipate that they're going to reports are going to be issued. This is Donald Trump's attempt to reach into the courts and say they're going to say nasty things about me. And I want you to stop it so the American public does not know about all the dirty laundry. We know much of it, but there are other things that would come out.
There's a lot we do not know, especially with regards to his efforts or lack thereof or communications and conspiracy and conversations.
With Ginny Thomas and other people on that day,
right?
And that's the reason that I find all this so very troubling. You know, if Donald Trump had more integrity of the sort that we heard about today in connection with Jimmy Carter, he would simply let this happen, let the report be released, and then you get inaugurated and move on, right? You know, and we'll talk about it for a few days, and then he goes on with his presidency, and we'll talk more about Panama and Greenland and Canada. Right?
No more Panama! Van Halen, 855-752-4842. One last segment with James Santel, just PS, on the board, 855-75-CIVIC. Come back with us.
Eagle, 1490 AM.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed automatic voter registration into law in December of 2020 to begin in January of 2023. Pandemic, technical, and bidding delays ensued, but preparation for voter registration at the DMV and other state agencies has finally begun. The New York State Board of Elections approved a resolution in December 2024 authorizing the state's Department of Motor Vehicles and other state agencies to create voter registration forms and transmit that data to the Board of Elections database. The new system allows citizens to opt out of voter registration, but will otherwise register or change registration information during official transactions. Gotham Gazette reports that both the implementation of automatic voter registration, or AVR, and online voter registration, or OVR, were delayed as technical staff was diverted for pandemic-related IT projects. While the delays are frustrating, getting it right is critical. Early adopter Oregon recently discovered flaws in its very successful AVR system, with evidence that ineligible citizens and non-citizens were accidentally registered during state transactions. The state is in the process of a system-wide audit. Brennan Center for Justice finds AVR has increased voter registrations from 9% to 94% in jurisdictions around the country. We have more on AVR at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
And welcome back to The Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Our last segment together today, James Santel. Everything he does is magic. Check his show out on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. The Amicus, a law review, just PS, is on the board. You folks are on the lines and the texters as well. Tom from West Dallas, he texted, and personally, I believe they should release the investigation the afternoon before the inauguration. That will be huge in the news cycle and take away from Trump's glory day. I love it, Tom. I mean, I'll take it anytime we can get it. But, yeah, certainly before the inauguration.
January 19th, again, that's what Tom's talking about. Also the day in which we're going to find out whether or not TikTok becomes a part of our national experience here. Or maybe somebody's going to buy it between now and then. Or maybe the Supreme Court tomorrow morning is going to tell us more about TikTok.
Am I too old that I don't care what happens with TikTok? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, what? So many other things. To play with and hit the buttons and be social about. I'm hard. It's hard for me. And I know there's probably some really serious ramifications that are, you know, practically that should be discussed. I'm just like, TikTok, who cares? I know it's a big thing. People make money on this thing. We're talking about people's livelihood.
Right. That's some of the argument to the Supreme Court tomorrow morning about the businesses that are dependent upon TikTok. And if you get rid of this thing, we're going to be upsetting the financial integrity of all these institutions. Tune in tomorrow morning. Split screen, Dom, tomorrow as the incoming president is sentenced in New York and the United States Supreme Court decides whether or not TikTok should go ahead. And that's also the brief in which the incoming president filed his amicus brief in the TikTok case. That was
in the TikTok case, right? Where he said,
Supreme Court, hold off. Don't do anything. Postpone all this. Why? Because when I become president, I can control all this. I'm going to make a decision on this. And basically says, I'm the guy who can resolve this. And therefore, take this off your docket. That was the amicus brief that Donald Trump filed as the president of the United States of America.
But he's not the president of the United States. We have one president at a time.
Right? In addition to doing all those international things, which apparently is out there doing, God knows what he's doing, he's also filing briefs in the highest court in the land, misrepresenting who he is.
I mean, if that's the least of his crimes, man. 855-752-4842. Susan from McFarland, you are up. Welcome, Susan. Happy days. What do you got for us?
Oh, hi. Thanks, guys. I enjoy listening to your show. And, Jim, I listen to yours every Saturday.
Thank you so much, Susan.
A question I have, one of the questions that's been rumbling around my brain is, how can people preserve what has already been discovered and all the stuff that's been going on around whoever's going to be in office next, because I refuse to say his name. And I just really feel as though they would go in with big shredders or take things off servers. So is there a way that this can be preserved so that it's not lost to for the history?
Right. I've got some friends who've asked the same thing of me. And I will tell you, Susan, that we live in a world, and I appreciate this now because, again, you can still get access, candidly, to all of my emails when I was the United States attorney. All those kinds of things are cached forever. And so absolutely, not for all assistant U.S. attorneys, but United States attorneys, all those things are still in the annals, the records of the U.S. Department of Justice. Susan, again, public disclosure is one thing, but the very existence of it, we live in a time when shredders will not take care of it. And we will still have the technological capacity. Jack Smith's report will still exist. It will still exist on servers somewhere inside the department.
Yeah, but it doesn't
department.
Do us any good if we don't
That's
get to
absolutely
see it,
right.
man. I
mean, That's
it,
absolutely right. Right.
If I don't get it, it doesn't. It may as well not exist. Right. If it's not accessible, it's somewhere, but you don't get to see it, it may well not exist.
I agree with you, and that's why it should be disclosed promptly.
Where's the Epstein tapes and books and comments? I mean, remember all that stuff?
Right.
A lot of folks involved. The guy apparently hung himself.
Right.
Well, I mean, what happened to all that information?
Right, and freedom of information requests, those have got to be pursued, right, not only by journalists and others out there. The reality is that, again, not only for history, but now, even with an incoming administration, the notion of coming in there and just sort of torching and burning everything, I think that's 1940s talk. We just don't do that anymore. And it will still be there. The question is, under what terms is it disclosed? Can you get it? Can you lodge it free, even under an incoming administration?
If I got $1 million in the bank and I can't get to it, I do not have any money, dude. 855-752-4842. Mark from the SAC, you are up. You will have the last word today, sir. Thank you. What do you got?
Yeah, thanks. I'd like the guys to talk about the immigration bill to articulate just what was so bad about it. And it occurs to me for the whole documents thing, the whole problem with that is that people that Trump has given that information out to, or adversaries that has given that information out to, can hold that over Trump's head to blackmail him and says, Trump gave us this secret information.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. He's always got to be afraid about that Putin might actually turn on his sorry ass and say, well, you know, Donald Trump betrayed all you people back there, so you better watch out, because that's something, the leverage that Trump has. That's what when you deal with criminals, you deal with criminals, and there's no honor among thieves.
All these tendrils, which, again, something people talk about that. I think, Mark, you're exactly right. Talk about it as the documents case. Well, he took some things he shouldn't have had. No, the answer is it's got many, many consequences far beyond just, including something as simple, Mark, as you're saying, our national security.
He didn't take like sticky notes, man. You know, he didn't steal some staplers from the office. The guy took national security secrets, lied about having them for over a year. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, contributor here at the Civic Media Radio Network, and a host of Amicus, a law review broadcasting live on Saturdays 9 to 11 a.m. Tomorrow, 10 a.m. is supposed to be the sentencing time. You say it's going to happen?
I think it's going to happen, yes.
All right,
yes.
I'm taking the other side.
Right, you call me if it doesn't, right?
Thank you, Jim. We'll be tuning in to your show on Saturday. Thank you, Jess P.S. on the board. Thank you for all you folks listening and hanging out with us. Now stick around. Peach Schwab Nightlight is coming up next. Have a great night.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX. La Crosse is home for Matt and Air on Air.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Matt and Air on Air's Greg Bach gives us his popcorn pick of the week. Mike Clemens joins for a Packers update, and we talk poetry with James Roberts of the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. The Todd Alba Show.
Donald J. Trump has been officially certified the winner of the 2024 election the way that the Constitution dictates. You see how simple that is? There's a vote, you certify the results, democracy moves on. You might not like the results. The person I wanted to have elected didn't win, but that's the way democracy works. Unlike 4 years ago on January 6th, where rioters stormed the Capitol.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Thousands of homes and businesses destroyed from multiple wildfires still burning in the Los Angeles area. And new evacuation orders tonight in Woodland Hills as winds kick up again. L.A. County Sheriff authorities announced a dozen arrests related to looting and are now working on a curfew. L.A. County Supervisor Catherine Barger.
We must stand up against opportunists who want to prey on these victims. I will not stand by and allow an already traumatic experience to be further compounded.
At least five people are confirmed dead in the Palisades and Eaton fires. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ordered an administrative stay in the trial of Guantanamo Bay prisoner and 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to allow for more oral arguments. He was expected to enter a guilty plea tomorrow that could possibly spare him the death sentence. The casket of Jimmy Carter arrived in Plains, Georgia for a private family funeral service this past hour. This is ABC News.